Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And we are ready to conclude the epic series on HBO.
Our special presentation, yes.
Yeah, it's we sat in a warm studio and recorded two amazing episodes on HBO, and we still have a third one that has to be just as amazing, at least, as the first two. It takes a lot out of you, people.
It does. But I'm excited. This is going to be the start of the internet and streaming age.
Yeah.
And, you know, with that, as with many things, HBO has been a pioneer. So we've got lots of interesting stuff to cover. We're picking up in 1989.
Oh, yeah. I remember that year. So July 25th, 1989, Time Incorporated acquires a 59.3% stake in a little company called Warner Communications Incorporated.
Thus creating Time Warner Incorporated.
Yep, the largest media and entertainment company in the world. And the following year, Time Incorporated would acquire the remainder of Warner Communications, making it a fully integrated company. So now it's an even larger media giant. HBO is still a big player in that enormous corporation. In that same year, 1989, HBO would launch HBO Selecciones en Español, later renamed HBO Español, and then later renamed HBO Latino. So you may have guessed this is a channel that offered in parallel with HBO for certain Spanish-speaking markets, about 20 initially, and took advantage of something called the Secondary Audio Program, or SAP, to replace the English-speaking track with a Spanish-speaking one. And it was a big success, so much so that other markets began to add this to their service.
And so much so that eventually they would start producing their own original content for those markets.
Right. So instead of just, say, taking an HBO original that was done in English and redubbing it, they actually made their own award-winning HBO originals. So you could, if you were a Spanish-speaking person, watch these and really appreciate that same sort of approach HBO had to making entertainment in English-speaking countries or Spanish-speaking ones. Now, this was still in the United States. HBO has not branched out into other countries as of yet. So this was for Spanish-speaking populations within the U.S., which, you know, stirred up some cultural issues in certain markets with people who might not be as progressive in some ways. Let's to be really diplomatic about it. But at any rate, it was a bold move and it paid off. And then HBO helped roll out another channel. They were behind the development of the Comedy Channel. So their idea was to create a special channel specifically catering to comedy. They had seen successes in other fields.
Right. And their comedy specials were doing so well.
Yeah. So they're thinking, wait, we know comedy. We know comedy. We are the people who give comedians that cachet of, I've got an HBO special. I've made it in the business. So let's capitalize on that.
Let's take clips from those specials and from movies and just toss them up on the air.
And let's not provide context for them because that would be too complicated. Let's just like clip the jokes out of their context, and they're going to be just as funny standing on their own as they would be within the incorporation of whatever setup there was around that joke, right?
You know, actually, this sounds a lot like YouTube. This was forward thinking. This was ahead of its time.
Yeah, see, that they were trying to follow the model of MTV.
Uh-huh.
You know, they wanted to do what MTV did with music videos. They wanted to do with comedy clips, but
It failed pretty wildly.
Yeah, see, it just was one of those things where unless you had that extra context, you couldn't truly appreciate the joke for what it was. You might find it amusing, but you wouldn't necessarily find it hilarious.
Right. Meanwhile, Viacom launched a rival channel named Ha! With an exclamation point, nonetheless.
Yeah. Which was even worse than the Comedy Channel.
However, they merged these two terrible things together in 1991 to create the Comedy Network, which eventually became Comedy Central, as we all know and love.
Right. And so it's interesting to me because one of the things that did happen that helped differentiate the Comedy Channel from Ha, I didn't put this in our notes, but the Comedy Channel was the channel that started carrying a certain Mystery Science Theater 3000. And in fact, I remember that if you've ever read any of the MST3K histories, they talk about how whenever they told people we're on the Comedy Channel, the response was, oh, you mean Ha?
Oh, so, no.
No. No, the other Comedy Channel.
The one that's called the... Oh,
yeah.
No.
So there was some confusion in the marketplace until those two finally kind of merged into its own unit. But 1989 was also when a certain HBO original series premiered, one that had a lasting impression on my childhood.
Me as well. Tales from the Crypt.
Yep, with the Crypt Keeper. So this was HBO's second attempt at making a horror anthology series.
The first one was The Hitchhiker, which nobody cares about.
Yeah. I mean, I watched that as a kid, too. I mean, I grew up during this era, so I watched The Hitchhiker.
Oh, but Tales from the Crypt was, I mean, I just want to give the Crypt Keeper a hug.
The only thing I have to say about Tales from the Crypt is it really is unfortunate that their very best episode was also the first episode. It was all downhill after that. The Man Who Was Death, phenomenal episode about a crazy executioner who really loses his marbles when the state he's working in outlaws capital punishment. Great episode, great music for that episode. Not particularly scary, but really well done. Sadly, I do not believe any of the subsequent episodes quite lived up to it. Even the one that had Tim Curry starring as like four different characters in the single episode. I watch this a lot. 1989 also saw the premiere of the series Dream On, which was, you know, a comedy series following a divorced guy who was trying to kind of find his place and find love. And interesting that the show itself was pretty amusing. Often it had raunchy situations, a lot of gratuitous nudity, both in Tales from the Crypt and Dream On, partially because they could get away with it. Like, this is HBO, so they're not
beholden to
the same standards as over-the-air TV. So,
and especially if they air later on at night, they're not going to get that many complaints from parent groups.
Right. So this was one of those things where, because they were able to do it, they were encouraged to do it. Even if that wasn't in their plan when they were making a show pitch, that ended up being kind of a directive handed down saying, look, guys, throw in some nudity and some violence in there because
why not? Well, I mean, that's also part of the point of Tales from the Crypt, I think, from the beginning, is that it was very much one of those old schlock B-movie kind of throwbacks.
Well, yeah, and very much like The Twilight Zone, the sort of idea of the karma coming back and haunting you, because it was usually about really awful people doing really awful things and then having really awful things happen to them as a consequence.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it was not such an awful person and really awful things would happen to them, but it was a general rule. Whereas with Dream On, it was like lots of cringe humor and some other stuff. There's some great moments in that. I remember when David Bowie showed up and he was phenomenal on Dream On. Yeah, see, I watched a lot of HBO when I was a kid. 1991, HBO rolls out HBO 2, which was later named HBO Plus. So HBO 2 is a complementary platform. It essentially has the same sort of stuff that HBO has, but a different schedule, made possible by this signal compression, which allows you to put multiple channels on a single transmission line. Now, this was a big deal because cable operators didn't want to yield up channels, multiple channels, to one provider.
Right. They only had so much bandwidth to provide. And so therefore, if you only, for example, have 40 spots to put stuff in, giving one channel two spots is a big deal.
Right. Exactly. When you could be increasing the variety that you're offering your potential customers. Right.
Sure. And especially at the time, I want to mention everyone did not have like 728 channels.
Right. That's what signal compression made possible, because you could actually put multiple channels across one transmission line by compressing the signal of each one and multiplexing them. So with HBO, that meant that they could eventually start creating targeted HBOs that would be marketed more toward a specific audience. So you might have one that has more action movies, for example.
Mm-hmm. And one with more comedy content.
Or one with more kid-friendly stuff. I mean, once again, like, this gave them the option of doing that without having to put in as big an investment as something like Festival or Take Two was. Back in the other episodes, you heard us talk about those failed attempts at making this kind of approach. But now the technology existed for them to do it. Also in 1991, HBO finally broke into Europe. Not physically, not like, you know, illegally. They actually made a foothold in Europe, in Hungary. They had the Hungarian cable system called Cablecom. That's with K's.
Oh, yeah.
For both the cable and the com. And that was partly backed by Time Warner. So this system, again, did not use the satellite system that was common in the United States. They didn't worry about getting a geostationary satellite in orbit above Hungary. They instead made microwave transmission towers to get the signal out to cable operators.
Returning to that older technology, which, I mean, was less expensive overall. It was considered too expensive to put up a satellite for all of Europe when you've got so many languages in such a small area to work with.
Right. It was not a practical approach in the case of Europe. I mean, if everyone in Europe spoke the same language, then it would be a different story. But with all the different languages and cultures, it meant that HBO had very different products for each country that it started to get into. In fact, that's a story that happens over and over. It's repeated over and over in HBO's history, where they would tailor make the experience for whatever market they were going into. But that meant the microwave transmission approach made way more sense than satellite. So they start over there, over in Europe, and then they start creeping into some other markets, about 15 more European markets eventually.
Meanwhile, that year, they also launched in Central and South America.
Yep. Much easier to do, as it turns out, because Central and South America, with the exception of Brazil, share a common language for the most part. So they had Spanish-speaking language channels that just broadcast by satellite over South America and Central America. The new channel was called HBO Olé. I'm surprised they didn't go with HBO Olé, honestly. Don't look at me. I'm not the one who named it. I'm just saying I'm surprised they didn't do it that way. It was available in countries in Central America, South America, and the Caribbean. I don't know how I feel about this HBO Olé thing. I guess probably other folks aren't upset by it. It just seems a little culturally insensitive to me.
It seems, yeah, that's...
But anyway, 1992, HBO gets a coup with the Larry Sanders Show starring Gary Shandling. And you might say, well, how is that a coup? Well, Gary Shandling had really made a big success in the 80s and early 90s with another show called It's Gary Shandling's Show, which was a send-up of sitcoms, and that aired on a different station.
On Showtime, so, a direct competitor to HBO.
Yeah, so Gary Shandling gets notoriety through Showtime, on the It's Gary Shandling Show, which, by the way, I thought was hilarious, and then moves over to HBO for what you could argue was an even better show. The Larry Sanders Show was more of a send-up of late-night television talk shows, like things like The Tonight Show or late-night type shows, those kind of things, with the character of Larry Sanders, played by Gary Shandling, as this very vain, very petty host. And it was supposed to show you kind of the backstage stuff that happens on these shows where on camera, everyone's really friendly and interested in each other. You know, the host has to be engaged with the guest. But then when the cameras go off, they become nasty, petty, terrible people. And it was a pretty amusing show. This is also the year when HBO launched another series called Real Sex, which was a magazine format show about sexual matters. It had a very frank, open-minded approach. It was
a little bit documentary in style, and
they covered some pretty, like, some things that could have easily been sensationalized or trivialized or portrayed in such a way as to say, aren't these people unusual?
But for the most part, it was pretty welcoming of the unusual, which was really nice for 1992. Actually,
yeah.
I mean, and I'm not saying that it wasn't. I mean, you know, they were putting it on the air, I think, largely because sex
yeah,
sells. It's
exactly.
Great.
Same reason why they had so much gratuitous nudity on Dream On,
yeah.
You know,
but
at the same time, the Michael Fuchs, you know, the CEO of HBO said, look, this series is what's giving us the money to fund all the documentaries that you guys love. And we're trying to deal with this frank subject matter in a way that's respectful,
mm-hmm.
which could have easily gone a different way. So, yeah. Also, then 1993, HBO expands yet again. See, now they're entering into a new era of expansion where they're getting new customers. They're not able to invent new customers in the United States. You know, people do that on their own, but they're not able to create a new market. So what they did was they started to expand in other parts of the world. So in 1993, they launched HBO Asia, which initially serviced the Philippines and Thailand. But eventually, through multiplexing, the service would be available in several Asian languages and spread to 23 nations. I think Mandarin Chinese was probably their biggest bet on that one.
I would imagine
so. Enormous population in China. So.
Oh, yes. Then in 1994, HBO Olay. Yeah, God, that's cringeworthy.
I know. Told you.
They launched a second channel in Central and South America, as well as a Portuguese language channel in Brazil.
Yep. So once again, expanding in other markets. And in 1995, Michael Fuchs gets promoted to overseeing all of Warner Music. And Jeff Bukes, who we mentioned in the previous episode, steps up as the new head of HBO. And in 1997, we get the premiere of one of, I would say, a predecessor to the really big breakout hits of HBO original programming.
Oh, it was the first hour-long drama series produced for HBO, and yes. That was Oz.
Yes, which, of course, was the drama series about a maximum security prison and the shenanigans that go on inside.
Shenanigans is maybe a
shanking. Lots of.
Yeah, I never watched the series myself, but I've heard many colorful things about it.
Yeah, it was rough. It was a rough series. But again, it was one of those things that HBO did because one, they knew there was going to be a market for it, and two, no one else could really do it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have the money for it, and they couldn't do it on broadcast television or basic cable.
No.
So that ended up getting some notice, but it wasn't a breakaway hit yet. In 1998, HBO produces a miniseries called From the Earth to the Moon, which was a big-budget miniseries. It was produced by Tom Hanks and Ron Howard. Tom Hanks did not star in it. He was just a producer behind the camera. Mostly starred actors who were not recognizable to most of the audience, and that was on purpose. It was to be able to put the focus on the drama of the story and to recreate the time of the story without distracting by saying, oh, it's such and such from so and so.
Also to lower the costs a little bit, I imagine.
Probably also a factor. So this particular model would end up serving as an example for future miniseries that HBO would produce, including things like Band of Brothers or John Adams. There was another one called Generation Kill, which probably is not as well known as those two, but other ones as well. So this was an approach to producing miniseries, which HBO had not really done. It tried a couple in the early 80s, but in general had stayed away from miniseries and had only been producing you know, open-ended series where
sure.
you run it season after season until you get tired and you stop doing it.
One of those that happened that began in 1998 was Sex and the City. It debuted that year and as we all know, became pretty wildly successful.
Yeah, spawned two films. I mean, it was a big, big hit. Lots of people either loved it or hated it or loved to hate it.
That was my
love to hate it.
Yeah,
I never ever watched it. My knowledge of Sex and the City was based solely upon other people's conversations and just like I was aware of it culturally, but I never watched the show. And I got the feeling that I'm not the right audience for that particular.
I'm not either. A fellow that I dated loved it and made me watch the entire thing.
So I hear past tense.
Delightful fellow.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, anyway, Sex and the City, ends up being the first of the big three, breakaway hits of HBO originals. We've got two more to talk about that round this out. But before we get to that, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices. And that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
All right. It's 1999. It's the year after Sex and the City debuts and gives HBO its first real incredible popular
push.
Hit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 1999, HBO ends up debuting another original series that kind of sets the tone for what HBO original programming is all about, at least for several series that follow behind The Sopranos. Obviously, one of the most important series in HBO history, not only that, but in cable history, because The Sopranos was critically acclaimed. It was not just successful. The critics loved it, and it would win Emmys in 2004 and 2007. It was nominated for Emmys every single year that it was eligible to do so. Because remember, The Sopranos was one of those shows that would go on a hiatus for more than a year
and then come back. It would garner 111 nominations over the span of its life.
So this was a cable show winning an Emmy. Now, that's a big deal because for a while, cable television was looked down on. Like, it was looked at as something that was always pretending to be as good as broadcast TV. And so the Emmys were for broadcast television. That's where the quality programming was.
And furthermore, something that might be seedy or a little bit patronizing.
Yeah.
But with something as hard-hitting and dramatic and beautiful as The Sopranos, it was a hit.
Yeah. So we started to see cable shows being taken seriously. They no longer needed to have their own little award ceremony. The Ace Cable Awards were around back in the day where, because they weren't really eligible for the Emmys, they were only eligible for Ace Cable nominations. The Sopranos definitely knocked that door wide open by consistently being one of the most nominated shows while it was on the air. So it really did change the entertainment industry. It's yet another reason why we talked so much about HBO, because, again, it had this huge effect on how things happened following, you know, the stuff that HBO would try. Whether it was successful or not, it would end up impacting the rest of the industry and other industries as well. So then in 2000, we get the third of the big three. We've already got Sex and the City. We've already got The Sopranos. So what comes next?
6 Feet Under.
Yeah, this was a show about two brothers who inherit their father's funeral service business after their father passes away. And it was a weird series. It's one of those series that's really difficult to describe to someone who's never seen it, because there were episodes where there's stuff that happened that was pretty funny. There was stuff that happened that was really tragic. There was stuff that happened where you felt like there would be no scenery left unchewed. I mean, it was, you couldn't easily sum it up.
It runs the whole range, yeah.
So it was one of those that ended up, again, being wildly successful. So that's why you've got the big three. And Oz was not part of the big three, because even though it was fairly popular and fairly well critically acclaimed, it never reached that same level of popularity as the other three.
I think it was a little bit less palatable to a very large market.
Yeah, yeah. There's another big show we'll be talking about briefly that had a similar issue, that it appealed to one particular market really, really well and other markets not so well. So 2002, we have Jeff Bewkes getting promoted to president and chief operating officer of Time Warner. So now he has left HBO and joined but he's now the head of the parent company. And so Chris Albrecht takes Bewkes' place as head of HBO. And Albrecht would end up struggling a bit. He was very big on taking chances, and he launched a lot of different programs on HBO. But he was really trying to aim to continue this momentum of the big three, to make another series that was just as impactful and compelling as those. And as it turns out, that's really hard to do. Sometimes you're just lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just strike on the right formula that just happens to resonate with the audience. And so even though they produced a lot of different shows, and many of them were really good ones, they didn't really hit the popularity of the big three. And so HBO was kind of floundering a little bit, you know, trying lots of different stuff and occasionally launching something really ambitious and then pulling the plug when realizing that, okay, this isn't
that it wasn't
anywhere.
Making them as much money as they thought it would have been. In 2003, a show like that launched. It was called Carnival, which I personally love so much. It's really important. It's got the Kurgan in it. So, I mean, you can't really go wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Kurgan. As of course, his philosophy, we should all remember, it's better to burn out than fade away.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And so it had excellent critical reception. It got 5 Emmys among 15 nominations over the 2 seasons that it was on the air, which is pretty incredible. But it was also costing the company $2 million per episode. And it's the first in this whole range of series that HBO would,
really,
would
really
start pursuing. But also that year, Time Warner sold its stake in Comedy Central to Viacom for $1.23 billion.
Yep. So now Time Warner is out of the comedy biz as far as Comedy Central is concerned, but is still, of course, HBO is still very much known for its comedy specials. And then in 2004, we get an amazing comedy, Deadwood, a silly little show about cowboys.
Deadwood was plenty funny.
Yeah, I guess if you found the multiple uses of certain incredibly blue phrases to be amusing.
I did.
Yeah. Well, no, I can't blame you. I've only ever seen two episodes and they weren't connected to each other, but they were both fascinating. And so it's one of those things where I really wish I had been able to watch the whole series. And just stick around, folks, because I'm about to get excited toward the end of this podcast. But yeah, so it's a Shakespearean Western. The language was very much inspired by Shakespeare. Now, I'm a Shakespearean scholar, and I love Westerns. So both of these things appeal to me. But it's absolutely filthy Shakespearean.
Shakespeare is absolutely filthy. That's true. The words don't mean the same thing anymore.
That's fair. So yeah, then they also launched in 2004 Entourage, which was a show about making fun of the Hollywood lifestyle and trying to break into Hollywood. And being a hanger-on to someone who has met with some meager success. It has fewer foul-mouthed cowboys in it, but Albrecht really struggled to get another big hit like The Sopranos, and most of the shows that he produced were either critically acclaimed but sparsely watched, or they were just outright panned. So a couple of the ones that didn't do well at all were with titles like K-Street and Unscripted, and that's two series that most people don't talk about anymore. Then there was also Louis C.K.'s Lucky Louie sitcom, which didn't do very well either. It, of course, would pave the way for the actual series Louie, which is not on HBO, but this earlier attempt was not a success. Now, Deadwood lasted three seasons and then was very quietly killed off because HBO didn't want to make a big deal out of ending Deadwood. I mean, their whole, like, corporate identity was that we produce shows that other people cannot or will not do. We have that money. We have that flexibility. We have the customers who want it. So we're going to do it.
Well, and then they realized, oh, we might not actually have that much money.
Yeah. Deadwood, as it turns out, another very expensive show
to produce. Staging a period costume drama.
Yeah.
With really big actors.
And yeah, really big actors, really, really expensive set pieces. And I mean, it was a very ambitious show that cost a lot of money. Meanwhile, they also had The Wire, which had an even smaller audience than Deadwood did. But The Wire was less expensive to produce and was also critically acclaimed.
Yeah, it was still very much critically acclaimed.
So if you've got two series and you've got one that's really expensive and is critically acclaimed, but only seems to be attracting mostly a male audience because men tend to like Westerns and women tend not to, those are just general trends, obviously not descriptive of everyone everywhere, so don't write me and tell me how you are a woman who loves Westerns and that I'm wrong.
I actually wonder how the numbers on Deadwood shook out. Now I need to research this.
Well, at any rate, they weren't good enough for HBO, so they wanted to very quietly kind of back off, and they had originally said that they were thinking about doing four seasons. They actually only did three. They said that they were going to do two movies to follow up and tie up all the loose ends, which had never happened. They haven't surfaced, so pretty sure that ship has sailed, to mix some cowboy pirate metaphors. but The Wire, they kept going because it was critically acclaimed and cheap. Yeah. So this way they got the benefit of having a critically acclaimed television show on their network, but it wasn't a huge financial loss to the company. It was,
and to be fair, involved fewer contrasting plaids, which I know not everybody appreciates to the level that I do.
You obviously haven't watched The Wire season two. Contrasting plaids was the subtitle of that season. I just made all that up. But yeah, so that's, you know, they wanted to have the benefit of having this kind of critically acclaimed programming on their channel, but obviously not have the albatross of an incredibly expensive production around the corporate neck.
Yeah, which is why in 2005 they started Rome.
Okay, so clearly they did not. Maybe they learned from their mistakes, and that's how they were able to repeat them almost exactly.
Huh. Well, I think that they learned those. I think that they made those mistakes after Rome had already premiered. That they were still in that excited, let's do everything we want to do phase in 2005 with Rome. But it was also very expensive.
Yeah.
Hard to get viewers into it.
They did. They canceled it after two seasons. Now, of course, originally they had talked about just it being a mini series where it would have only have been something like 12 episodes, but then they said that it would come back for a second season, and sometime in that second season they're like, whoops, okay, let's just let this quietly die too. And there's only so many times you can watch someone fall out of a toga, I guess. Yeah, by the way, still in that era of, hey, we can get away with it because we're a paid television station, so let's create content that has lots of gratuitous violence and or nudity. Rome had plenty of both.
Oh, yeah.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
2007, in November of 2007, a major event happened that affected all television channels everywhere, mm-hmm. because at least in the United States.
Well, all television channels that were producing original content.
Yeah, because that's when the Writers Guild of America had a strike.
Right.
Animation was fine because they weren't in the Writers Guild. I knew a lot of animators who were grumbling about this. But the Writers Guild of America had a strike, and so HBO had banked a lot of stuff that helped them kind of coast through the writer's strike without too much trouble. They had the miniseries John Adams that helped them get through it. They had another season of The Wire that helped them get through it. But HBO did not get through 2007 without some major trouble. For example, Chris Albrecht, the head of HBO, was arrested following a physical altercation. He was arrested because he physically threatened his girlfriend at the time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not good. And apparently it wasn't his first offense either.
Yeah, and Time Warner called for his resignation. Actually, I read the letter he wrote, Albrecht wrote, where he was very frank and admitted guilt and said, I thought I had put these problems behind me. I was an alcoholic. I went into Alcoholics Anonymous.
Wow.
2 years ago, I thought, you know, I can handle drinking alcohol, and clearly I was wrong. So he was very much admitting his fault in it. So at least there's that. I mean, it's still a terrible, terrible thing, but he didn't deny it. So I guess that's something. So Time Warner now is saying, all right, well, what are we going to do with HBO? Who's going to lead it? There was not a specific person that they could point to and say, this is the person upon whose shoulders HBO should rest. Mm-hmm. So they ended up picking three people to kind of divide up the entire job of ruling this kingdom.
All of whom had been working for HBO since the 1980s.
Yep. You had Bill Nelson, who became the CEO of HBO. Eric Kessler became one of the co-presidents, and the other was Richard Plepler. And they all had experience. Richard Plepler did not have any experience in programming going into it, but would turn out to have some very keen ideas on where to go. Because remember, this is still when HBO is trying to recapture the glory of the big three and try and find another original series that they can really be proud of and that can carry the company. So at around the same time in 2007, a little upstart company called Netflix, which had been in business for a few years, announced that it was going to create a streaming service, an online streaming service.
Oh, right. They had already been offering DVDs via mail, but yep. At this point they started offering streaming.
Yep. So this becomes another competitor to HBO, because HBO now, they still have as part of their business this idea of uncensored, uncut movies that you can watch. But with Netflix streaming,
at least you can watch them whenever you want to.
Yeah. Assuming that the title is in their library, which we all know is a huge assumption.
Huh. And furthermore, they obviously at that time were not making their own original content.
Yeah. Yeah. Netflix was pretty much beholden to whatever studios were producing content at that time. But yeah, this was another competitor, and it was outside the cable industry. Everyone got a little nervous at this point, mm-hmm. including HBO.
Oh, sure, sure. Speaking of that original content, however, in 2008, HBO debuted True Blood, which was really its first big hit since those big three.
Yeah, yeah. This one was a huge hit. It was extremely popular. You can debate upon whether or not it merits that. I know there are such debates. I've never watched the series, so I can't comment one way or the other.
Oh, it's terrible. I love it.
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, you know, terrible things have their place in this world. Then other shows such as Boardwalk Empire, The Newsroom, and Veep followed. So these were shows that didn't necessarily have the same following as the big three, but again, were critically acclaimed, seemed to be popular among the audiences that really love these shows. And then you started seeing a couple of major breakthrough hits that followed. So.
Stuff like
big three.
Yeah, yeah. Stuff like Girls and Game of Thrones.
I can't do any more because they'll take us down. Yeah, no, Game of Thrones, big hit, obviously, for HBO. I don't have HBO, by the way. This is where I mention I don't own HBO, but I read all the books, so you can't spoil me.
Suckers.
Yeah, you can tell me about stuff that happened in the show but didn't happen in the books, but here's the thing. I don't care because I read the books. So to me, that's the story. So bring it, is what I'm saying.
Oh.
Unless your name is George R.R. Martin, in which case, do not bring it, sir. I will be happy to read it when you publish it.
And
take your time. Take your time, sir. As long as you need.
Yeah. No. As Neil Gaiman once said, George R.R. Martin is not your bitch.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Paul and Storm sang a song, and then George R.R. Martin came out and broke their guitars. It's a great, great moment on YouTube. Look it up.
For the record, I've also read the books. You cannot spoil me either.
Yes. That's a challenge. Unless you're George R.R. Martin. 2010. Yeah. I don't want him writing in and say, guess which Stark dies next.
I totally want him to do that, actually.
Oh, no.
Oh, come on. It would be the best.
Well, then we could hold it over everyone else's head.
George R.R. Martin, if you're listening, please write, spoil me. Spoil Lauren.
We'd have to give him just your email address. And the one that I give out at the end, it goes to both of us, Lauren. This is irresponsible of you. All right, just send her a direct tweet. Okay, so in 2010, HBO launches HBO Go, which is its online streaming service for HBO subscribers, which allow HBO customers to watch content on demand for the first time.
Only 3 years after Netflix had already been doing the same thing.
And, of course, it's limited to just people who, well, theoretically, it's limited to just people who have an HBO subscription. So if you do not subscribe to cable and subscribe to HBO, you cannot access HBO Go legally.
Right.
I say legally because it is my understanding, and again, I do not do this, is my understanding that some people occasionally will lend out their logins to friends or family who do not have HBO so that they can watch things. In fact, that'll tie into something we're going to talk about in just a moment. Now,
yeah,
we're finally up to current day. So here's the thing. We don't have to take the Wayback Machine back to present day, because we are in present day now. So the Wayback Machine,
so
we took.
Us.
Yeah. Now, granted, we have been traveling through time for three episodes, and it's gotten a little warm in this room.
It's kind of stanky.
Yeah, because that's the problem with being in this Wayback Machine. It's like a quarter the size of our studio. So it's been a little. Let's just go ahead and step out right now. Okay, that's better. Yeah, that's way better. All right, so we're in present day. Now, first of all, Game of Thrones, that series we'd mentioned just a couple of points ago before we got off on our George R.R. Martin, please spoil us rant. This turned out to be the most pirated show in the world. Almost 50% more people illegally downloaded the Game of Thrones premiere for season 4 than the next closest rival, which was The Walking Dead. So 50%, almost 50% more people. That shows that the show is incredibly popular. And in fact, in April 2014, Game of Thrones broke the record for most pirated episode within the first 24 hours of going live, with 1.17 million unique IP addresses torrenting the premiere of season 4. So that doesn't count all the people who used someone else's HBO Go profile.
Okay, but I want to say here, it's drawing some 17 million legit viewers per episode. Well, legit or legit-ish.
You know,
again, not counting people who are stealing that password. But the thing is that HBO officially does not care about that thing. CEO Richard Pepler has said, and I quote, "It's a terrific marketing vehicle for the next generation of viewers." And also, quote, "We're in the business of creating addicts."
They've actually noticed that people have subscribed to HBO after pirating stuff.
Right.
Because they wanted to have access to this, and they didn't want the problems of either using someone else's HBO Go pass, which might crash, because that's happened a couple of times. It happened on the premiere of season 4.
Right.
Too many people were trying to access the HBO Go network, and as a result, it crashed under the demand, which caused a lot of people to complain. I maintain that 90% of the people complaining were borrowing someone else's HBO Go pass. I think that's probably an accurate... I haven't done any research on this. This is based upon the people I saw on Twitter complaining. I'm like, you don't subscribe to HBO. You're using someone else's pass, and you're complaining that it doesn't work. Entitled? Much? Anyway.
We're in the business of creating addicts. It's working.
Apparently it works really well. It seems like it's going pretty well. I got some figures here you've got in this notes here, Lauren.
Yeah, they're doing pretty okay. They're operating at a 36% profit margin of the some $1.3 billion they rake in every year. They currently have some 130 million subscribers worldwide. And HBO, their subscription base is growing faster than it has in the past 17 years. To be fair, Netflix is growing even faster still and has surpassed HBO in the number of subscribers. It did so back in Q3 of 2013. But Netflix's operating costs are a whole lot higher, being that it's still busy building its original content and investing in all of those new markets.
And HBO recently made a partnership with a direct competitor to Netflix that could really shake things up. We're talking about Amazon Prime.
Yeah. They announced a deal where Amazon is going to get to stream a bunch of HBO's original content.
Yeah.
Not all of it. I think that Game of Thrones and Sex and the City were both left out of the deal.
Yeah, Game of Thrones specifically, not surprising anyone,
was
left out of the deal. But a lot of their older content in particular, things like The Sopranos and, say, Deadwood, will be allowed to stream on Amazon Prime. So that has me really excited, because now I'll finally get to watch both those shows. I have not seen them. So to me, I mean, granted, I know a lot about what happens in them.
It's
just culturally you do.
Oh, sure. But that's not really the point.
No, the performances and the execution, in literal senses in both those shows.
Yes.
Are what will be really interesting to me, because I've always heard so much about them. Now, I hope that, I'm able to go in with managed expectations and not just, you know, super hyped, because obviously very few things live up to, super hyped expectations, but I'm looking forward to seeing them.
Honestly, Deadwood lived up to the hype for me.
I'm looking forward to seeing it from the beginning, because like I said, I only saw two episodes completely out of context, and that was troubling.
Underage listeners, these shows are for mature audiences only, or immature.
Wait, does that let me out?
Immature, mature audiences.
Oh, all right. So
don't go running out and watching this.
Without your parents' guidance and permission.
That would be, you know.
Don't be like Jonathan, who was watching Tales from the Crypt when he was a little kid.
Clearly no damage was done to either of us.
Yeah.
We turned out completely normal.
Right.
But at any rate, no, this entire Amazon deal, especially with Amazon expanding its empire to include that new Fire TV gig, that $99 internet TV device streaming thing, could potentially mean a bit of a crunch for Netflix.
Yeah. I mean, this is the next era, right? So I'm sure Netflix's response will be to go and invest even more in original programming, because again, you have to differentiate yourself. They've had some very famous issues with keeping films in their libraries mm-hmm. and licenses expiring. People get upset about that. The funny thing is, that's the way it's worked ever since this whole pay TV model even started. I mean, HBO had the same issues where they would have a movie under license and then the license expires and they don't have access to that film anymore. That's why you're not going to see Star Wars all the time. It's only whenever the license comes up and they're allowed to show mm-hmm. it.
Also, as we said in our streaming content episodes, Netflix's game plan right now is to, and I think this was the quote, become HBO before HBO can become us.
Yeah.
So
the race is on.
Yeah.
Both of them are racing out of the gates, and we don't know. Maybe there'll be a photo finish. Maybe we'll have two amazing content providers that we all enjoy. Maybe one will come out on top. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, it's been great getting a chance to talk about HBO. And we know that we really went super in depth with this one. And that's not normally what we do with our episodes. But in this case, because it had such an impact on the way cable television works today and the reason we even have cable in our cities, we felt that it merited this kind of discussion. So guys, if you have any topics you want us to cover, whether it's crazy in-depth version or you just, hey, there's these eight things that none of them would probably make a full episode, but I want to know about all eight. Could you answer these questions? Send us your questions. Send us your suggestions. Let us know on email. We got an email address. It's techstuff@discovery.com. We get a lot of people sending email to How Stuff Works asking what our email address is. Let me repeat it. It's techstuff@discovery.com. Or drop us a line on Facebook, Twitter, or Tumblr. Our handle at all three is techstuffhsw. And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.